You're listening to an official podcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn, preaching God's word to New York's biggest borough.
All right, good morning, family. My name is Stephen Aguaya, and I have the privilege of delivering the message today. Once I take a sip of my iced coffee. Seems like I have a bag. I was going to get cookies from the back, but I wasn't able to give blood, so I just brought my own, but that's okay. It's good. It's very good. I just wanted to be comfortable, you know? I feel like I'm in a good place. I just want to be, you know, something's not right, right? Like, something about this just doesn't come across correct for this. You know, comfort itself isn't inherently bad or wrong, but there will be times where our desire for personal comfort will conflict with our responsibility as Christians. And then what? What happens when comfort is inappropriate and ineffective for the task that God has before us? Today, we're going to be talking about comfort zones, and hopefully taking a step out of some of ours as well. It's actually very hot, so it is uncomfortable. So we're going to be talking about comfort zones. Before I get to that, I do want to make a very, very special announcement that today, 10 years ago, my wife decided that she was going to give her life to God and get Cheech and Boon Club for 10 years today. 11 years, I'm sorry. Extra year, in addition. That's bad husband points right there. I'm right up in my next year right now. We also have some visitors from the church in Lagos, Nigeria. Romans 8, verse 5. Get ready to be uncomfortable.
I like it.
It was very uncomfortable for me to wear that robe. It could have gone really bad. That was an uncomfortable place to be. Romans 8, we're going to read in verse 5. It says, those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on what the flesh desires. But those who live according to the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Those who are in the realm of the flesh cannot please God. You, however, are not in the realm of the flesh, but are in the realm of the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God lives in you. And if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, they do not belong to Christ. But if Christ is in you, then even though your body is subject to death because of sin, the Spirit gives life because of righteousness. And the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you. He who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies because of his Spirit who lives in you. Therefore, brothers and sisters, we have an obligation, but it is not to the flesh to live according to it. But if you live in according to the flesh, you will die. But if you live with the Spirit, you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live. For those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you receive does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you receive brought out of your adoption into sonship, and by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, we are heirs of God and co-heirs of Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. So Paul is a master of saying the same thing over and over and over and over again in order to get us to understand the point. So the very, very clear point that Paul is making in this passage in Romans 8 is that you have two options. You have two choices You can either live by the flesh or live by and in the Spirit. If you live by the flesh, you do whatever feels right at the time. Whatever in that moment feels like the right thing to do, you do that. You do essentially then whatever you want. Whatever you want to do. There's no space for correction, because correction implies it needs to be corrected, and it needs to be corrected implies that you're wrong at some point. And if you're living by the flesh, you get to decide what's right and wrong, and you will make yourself right all the time. And God forbid something doesn't go your way, or you had a desired outcome for a situation, it doesn't happen that way, and God doesn't answer a prayer. When you're living by the flesh, this is means of, okay, well, I'm done, I give up. Paul says the outcome of this is death and hostility to God. He actually, in here, creeps in a really, really cool idea that is so hard for me to not spend an hour and a half talking about. But there's an idea here that he's essentially saying that in God's plan for individual, like, spiritual evolution, when you live by the flesh, you're limiting yourself to, like, level one. And you're stuck in this, essentially, this human cocoon, and all you get are human gifts, and that's it. And God's got so much more in store for you, but when you decide to live by the flesh, you limit yourself to just that. Now, these are our spiritual concepts, but I think we see this a lot. I was reading up on this basketball player, Antoine Walker, who was drafted by the Celtics in 1996, and he played in the NBA for 13 years, was a three-time All-Star, won a championship with Miami in 2006. When you get drafted, in June, you don't get your first check until November. So what Antoine Walker did with his first check was he bought his mom a house, because that's what you do with your first check. He bought his mom a house, great start. But then, money just kind of changed him. He was buying ridiculous amounts of jewelry. He bought 6 houses with the intention of, well, I'm going to use these one day. He was buying luxury cars. But this is kind of his daily, just kind of what he would do. Over the span of the 13 years he was in the NBA, he wasted. And when I say wasted, I mean he has no means of acquiring there's no tangible evidence that he ever owned this, $110 million. Just on literally, he says that it was on gambling, on unwise real estate, and on just wild living. It's $110 million because he was just doing whatever he wanted. He had a financial advisor. And his financial advisor said, hey, Antoine, you should really save a lot of this, and you should also not be buying 5 or 6 houses. It's not a good idea. You know what? I hear what you're saying, but it's my money. I'm going to do whatever I want. And he blew $110 million. And if it was just him, it wouldn't be a big deal. But this is a common story throughout successful Americans. Mike Tyson lost in the hundreds of millions, and we're still not even sure because he was buying tigers. I'm going to buy it because I feel like it. Michael Vick had a ton of money wasted. Michael Jackson. Since I see the theme here. Michael Facey. There it is, just don't name. But I think we can look at that in the hundreds of millions and think, what were you thinking? And if I had that money, I would. Are you sure? Are you sure? You know that, man, I'll give to God when I win the lottery. If I could just win the lottery, I would give. Are you sure? Because nothing really changes about who you are when you get more money. You just have more access to do things that you couldn't do before. So what happens to these stars? They get all this resource, and they just do, they're living by the flesh. Now we see that, like, what were you thinking? How could you do that, Antoine Walker? How could you just throw away $110 million? But church, I think you have to look in the mirror as well. and ask those same questions. Like, are our decisions really based on what the Spirit desires, or do we literally construct a universe where we get to determine everything? If I feel good, I'll do it. If I don't feel good, I'm not going to do it. You can either live by the flesh or by the Spirit. Now, it's important to understand that the Spirit is more than just a conscience. It's more than the voice in the back of your head that says good things every now and then. The Spirit that Paul is talking about here is the essence of God. It's who God is. You never have to question, well, what does the Spirit want me to do? Because you have the Bible in a relationship with God. What does the Bible tell you to do? Well, that's going to be what the Spirit tells you to do as well, because they are connected. You know what it means to be spiritual? To just have your body do what the Spirit tells you to do. That's it. I think what made spiritual mean this like deep, like super woke thing that like you just kind of understand and who cares? Yeah. Who cares how much you understand if your flesh isn't being moved by what the Spirit tells you to do? So your options again are either are you living by the flesh or living by the Spirit. Spirit should control your behavior and your hearts and your thoughts. There's a couple of scriptures that talk about this. In Luke 9:57. Now the issue here is that because the Spirit and the flesh are different, there will be conflict. There will be times where the Spirit says B, and your flesh is like, I really, really want A. I've wanted A all my life, and there's going to be a conflict. So Jesus talks about that here. Actually, I mean, throughout the gospel, but here in Luke 9:57, says, as they were walking around along the road, a man said to him, I will follow you wherever you go. Jesus replied, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. He said to another man, follow me. But he replied, Lord, first let me go and bury my father. Jesus said to him, let the dead bury their own dead, but you proclaim the kingdom of God. Still another said, I will follow you, Lord, but first let me go back and say goodbye to my family. Jesus replied, no one who puts a hand to the plow and looks back is fit for service in the kingdom of God. If you're part of this church, this is the passage that we use to help someone understand, hey, do you want to be a disciple? Are you a disciple? Now, it doesn't stop after those questions get asked.
Yeah.
Like, after you become a disciple, the standard doesn't somehow reduce because you pass the test. It should define who you are.
Yeah.
And right here, Jesus gives... I mean, it's a three-point sermon that he presents right here. It's like you have to just like if you're gonna follow me, here's how it's gonna be uncomfortable. Well, foxes have a place to live. Birds have a place to live. My lifestyle doesn't really like facilitate you always knowing where you're gonna spend the night. If your sentimental attachments are attached to your family traditions, well, following me might mean that you're gonna have to not be attached to your family like that anymore. Sorry. Well, let me first say goodbye to my family. It sounds good. But you know what? If you already have that backup plan set up, then you're probably not going to be right for doing the kind of work that I'm asking for. These are all uncomfortable realities. But it doesn't change the fact that this is what Jesus says is spiritual behavior. In John 3, verse 8, you can write that down. Jesus describes the Spirit as the wind. You can't cage it. You can't control it. It's just kind of... Because that's the nature of God, to just do and be and move. And if we claim to be spiritual, then the behavior should match that as well. In Galatians 5:22, Paul says the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. These are behaviors associated with life by the Spirit. And honestly, I think one of my favorite and very recently discovered perspective on this. So in Acts 2 at Pentecost, when Peter and the other apostles are preaching to the crowd and they're hearing multiple different languages, the first group of haters, what they say is, oh, you guys are just drunk. Now, think about that. If I got up here and started speaking English, and in your own native tongue, not English, you understood everything that I was saying, would you say he's drunk? That's not drunk behavior to magically be able to break the bounds of language. I think what they were saying they were drunk to is that how are these guys this confident? Yeah. Like how in the world are isn't that the guy that weren't these the guys that just ran away? Like they must be under the influence of something if they're up there talking to us like they have some sort of authority. What is going on here? Oh, they are under the influence of something. It's the Spirit. The Spirit brings a sense of confidence that the flesh might not necessarily be allowed to have. And that's not comfortable. Imagine Peter. Peter is the poster child for I blew it. Like, he's the guy that you reference as a, well, at least you're not Peter. Like, he completely tanks, and now it's his responsibility to deliver the message that changes what Christianity is going to be. That's not comfortable. So when he's moved by the Spirit, he does uncomfortable things. And people are like, you must be drunk, man. You have no means of being that confident. Because alcohol will do that to you. Right? I don't have to go to this kid's in the room. But you all of a sudden get some sort of bravery that you didn't have prior to said drink. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's like, you remember this time in your life, right? Like, oh, well, I guess I can go talk to that girl. Where's that confidence? Where's that coming from? You're inebriated by something. But now what Peter says, like, no, we're not drunk. We're not messed. No, we're influenced by the Spirit, and that's making us confident. That's making me confident. It's pushing me to a place of discomfort. And that's why I'm saying what I'm saying. That's the nature of the Spirit. There was a campus retreat in South Africa many, many, many years ago that, you've seen Coming to America, right? No jokes. You're not allowed to make that joke. You know the scene where the wedding is at the end? The big castle. That's actually a resort called Sun City. It's amazing. Sun City is incredible. It's just a really fancy resort in South Africa. So we had a campus retreat not so far from where this resort was. And the campus retreat started on Friday. And Friday, the students had spaghetti and meat sauce. Saturday morning, there was leftovers. So the students had somewhat warmed up spaghetti and meat sauce. And then we put my mom and dad put these kids on a bus and sent them to Sun City for time in the sun and the resort. Great. It was about, I don't know, maybe five or six buses of students that went on this trip. Now, the thing about not warming up food correctly is that it sometimes can have a, let's just call it a negative effect on your stomach, right? And what happened on the way back from this trip was, so my parents and my siblings were in the car in the back following the train of buses. And then randomly, you just see all the buses stop. And it was like a zombie movie, because people are running out all the exits and the windows and like breaking into people's homes to use the bathroom. Like cutting the line at gas stations, just doing all sorts of craziness because there was something inside them that needed to come out. They were all of a sudden gifted with this incredible bravery and courage to do very uncomfortable things, because the risk of keeping that stuff inside you was more than what they're willing to handle. It's a disgusting story. But there's something about having the Spirit that should push you to do uncomfortable things.
Come on, Stephen.
Hey, in what other scenario can you break into someone's home to use the bathroom? I'm sorry, miss, I have right through the door. Because they felt it was that important. Like, it doesn't matter what my social anxiety is, it doesn't matter what I'm not a people person, it didn't matter. I'm gonna keep this going, but like, yeah. It didn't matter, because they needed something, and it didn't matter what was in the way. If we're being honest, I think that there's certain behavior that the Spirit might push us towards that's just not, it's not normal behavior. It's not socially correct. It's not wise. But if that's what the Spirit is saying, it shouldn't matter who's in the way. It shouldn't matter what's in the way. It shouldn't matter what part of your reputation gets potentially damaged, because you're being moved by the Spirit. And that's by definition what being spiritual means. No matter who or what or where is in the way, I need to do this. Because the Bible, because God, because this is telling me to do that I'm going to get uncomfortable to make this happen. That is the nature of the Spirit. So what do you do when the flesh conflicts with the Spirit? When God says be and you say A, what's the outcome? The reality is that the path of least resistance is sometimes the path of least righteousness as well. That the easy decision, the one that just, okay, I can just get done, I'll just do this and be done, might also be the part that's least connected to God's will. And this does not mean do uncomfortable things for uncomfortability's sake. This just means do what the Spirit is telling you to do. And I think we romanticize this idea sometimes. We say, oh, in that moment I felt the Spirit do this. Okay, well, what about all the other moments? Because the Spirit isn't just limited to these once in a good news sharing situations. Like, it's not just like, oh, and that one time when I felt moved to talk to that person about my relationship with God, it's like, great, that's great. But the Spirit's not going to be silent in other interactions. It's not just going to show up in this one moment, and we glorify that one moment as if that's when God gets activated, but He's there all the time.
Yeah.
So the behavior isn't this flip on and flip off thing. It's a continual presence of I'm going to be moved by the Spirit no matter what.
Yeah.
And if you have the Spirit, that should happen every day.
Yep.
There should be something on a daily basis that is not Stephen making this decision. It's not me and I just want to do this so bad, so I'm going to do it. I have to be moved by the Spirit all the time. Do you want to live by the Spirit? Well, if the answer is yes, the cost is going to be your comfort.
Mm.
There's no coupons. There's no Groupons. There's no sale. There's no discount. You can't buy it in bulk. It's going to be your comfort that you have to pay. Why? Why, God, in your why would you make this so difficult for us? Let's look at 2 Corinthians 4.
Come on, Stephen.
Second Corinthians 4. We'll read from verse 7. It says, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed. We always carry around in our body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be revealed in our body. For we, who are alive, are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that that his life may also be revealed in our mortal body. So then, death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. It is written, I believe, therefore I have spoken. Since we have the same spirit of faith, we also believe and therefore speak, because we know that the one who raised the Lord Jesus from the dead will also raise us with Jesus and present us with you to himself. All this is for your benefit, so that the grace that is reaching more and more people may cause thanksgiving to overflow to the glory of God. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day, for the light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes, not on what is seen, but what is unseen. See, what is seen, for what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Don't we need to read that every day? Don't we need to be reminded of this every day? So why, God? Why put me through uncomfortable things? Because sometimes discomfort is part of the plan. Sometimes difficulty is part of the plan. Sometimes failure. Sometimes, God, I really wanted this, but sometimes that is part of the plan and purpose of God, because our light and temporary discomforts are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. What is me, like, forcing my way into, like, I'm going to drink this coffee, I'm going to eat these cookies here in an inappropriate situation when I could, like, when someone's willing to give me the cookie factory. You know, like if someone's willing to give me the recipe for Oreo cookies, but I'm holding on to my bag of Oreos. It's like, Stephen, no. You get something, if you just don't give in right now, you get something much bigger. And we do this all the time. It's normal behavior if you're an adult. So yes, you could You could speed through traffic all the time, or you could protect your life and your family. Like, it's like okay, well, then in those moments you make adjustments. I know I want to speed, but I won't because there's something more important than me getting there on time. I have a kid in the back seat. You could cheat on that exam, or you could do it with honor and integrity and actually know what you're doing at your job when you graduate with a degree that you said you know what you're doing. Like we do this, hopefully.
Yeah.
Because we know that the result is so much bigger than the effort. Like, what I have to do, and our discomfort here is nothing compared to what we get. Messing around with that guy that you know and people have told you that is not helpful for your relationship with God. When God promises complete contentment with or without romantic relationship. That you're selling yourself short. When God is promising you that you can be completely content no matter what, when you say, you know what, God, it's okay, I'm going to try and make that happen on my own, you are selling yourself short. Drunkenness as an escape from reality. When God says that I've crafted paradise for you if you just keep yourself sober-minded. If you can just, like, hold on. I've given you the perfect escape. Just stick with it.
Yeah.
You're selling yourself short. And you say, no, I'm going to make that happen here. Career advancement. When God says that he needs to be... It doesn't make sense that God and the lifestyle of the Christian has kind of sometimes become the most flexible line item in our responsibilities. It's like, oh, I have these things to do. What can I adjust to accomplish advancement in work and career, whatever? Well, I could miss this, the meaning of the body. I could go to church less. I could maybe sacrifice my giving here, so I can. It doesn't make sense that if God is the agenda, then whatever is on your agenda should fall in line with what does God want. And if that means sacrificing other things that makes your life uncomfortable, okay, it's just like this, and then it's gone. Then life is gone. And then you get something so much more valuable than holding on to, like, no, I need this raise. I need this promotion. I need this. And I'm not saying that we have to willy-nilly, okay, well, I guess God doesn't want me to work hard. Absolutely not. But God needs to be the priority.
Yeah.
And it needs to be seen through your behavior, not through just what you say.
Yeah.
Like, through what your schedule actually looks like. And yes, it's uncomfortable, but it was designed to be uncomfortable because what you get afterwards is so much greater. Teens, let me tell you, man, it's extremely uncomfortable to be a disciple in high school.
Yeah.
Extremely uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to do the right thing in high school.
Yeah.
You're seen as, oh, so-and-so is a snitch, so-and-so is a teacher's pet, so-and-so is a big... Who cares, man? Who cares? Let them talk. That's what haters are going to do. That's just kind of their thing. They're gonna make fun of stuff they don't understand. Let them do that. It's uncomfortable to be righteous and young, but the outcome is a life that I guarantee your parents would give up everything to backtrack and be able to have on their own.
Yeah.
So just deal with the uncomfortability for a little bit, and then you become an adult. You can make fun of your own kids later on. It's uncomfortable, but it works. And there's talking about money. I respect Phil so much for every week talking about special contribution. I can maybe do it twice, and I'll feel like, it's uncomfortable talking about money. It's uncomfortable talking about having to give money. It's uncomfortable. But look at the outcomes that we just saw. So every now and then, be uncomfortable so that you can change someone's life. It doesn't seem like that temporary financial strain versus someone's life and destiny being altered.
Yeah.
So, well, one of those is significantly more valuable. And that's the nature of what we're doing here. Doing uncomfortable things for the glory of heaven.
Yeah.
Evangelism is an uncomfortable topic. Mm-hmm. Because an uncomfortable behavior. Because we're very, very careful about how we look around people. No matter how much you say you don't care what people's opinions about you, everyone has a thing. And it makes sometimes evangelism very, very difficult. But if you think about it, remove church culture, remove the word, like just look at just what it is that God is asking you to do. That I have given you the cure to the disease that humans just have. Now I'm giving you the cure and the recipe. Are you going to just take that on your own? Or are you going to make it part of who you are to distribute this to other people? Sure, we call it evangelism. We call it sharing your faith. But it's so much more valuable than that. And yes, it's going to be uncomfortable. But at some point, someone needs to be uncomfortable to get you this as you are today.
Yep.
Like someone had to be discomforted, and now you're here. And if it stops at you, and well now I'm here, so now I can be comfortable. It's like, well, it can't. It can't stop at us. So yes, that means sometimes doing uncomfortable things, and that's fine. And you may not know what to say, how to say it, you may not understand, but you have the Holy Spirit. And God's power is made perfect in our discomfort. In the areas that we just don't get it, oh great, perfect. And then you will be proud about it. And God can come in and do what God does. It's time for us to get uncomfortable. It's an uncomfortable conversation to talk about being uncomfortable. But if God is promising this outcome of glory that far outweighs whatever discomfort you had to invest yourself into, it's worth it. And I know that it's hard to live that way, because it's hard to say that life is short when you're living. Like when you're doing the day-to-day 24 hours, 7 days, and it's like, how are we still? It's tough. But when you step out of it, after all this is done, you're gonna look back, and this is gonna be a blank. This is gonna be, what was I complaining about? Like, what was it really that bad? Was it really, really that uncomfortable when you're sitting in paradise forever? And that's the reminder that if you try and make heaven here, you'll succeed. You'll get it, no problem. Because the world makes it available.
Yeah.
The world will give you these things that are perceived comfort. And it's a rabbit hole. Like you need one thing. You need the phone. You need the phone update. You need that app. You need the phone case and the screen. And you need the protection plan. And you become, okay, as long as I have this phone universe, I'm fine. Well, then I need this job and this relationship. And you're creating heaven for yourself here. Great. But then it expires. And then what? Where discomfort, not wearing the fuzzy robe, not relaxing all the time spiritually, but actually putting on the armor of Christ, being clothed with who Jesus is, and doing uncomfortable things, might change the world.
Yeah.
It'll change your world,
yeah,
and the world of those around you. So every now and then, discomfort is necessary. If you're here today, and you're searching for God, and you're hitting a snag, and something just doesn't seem like it's fitting, that's normal. That's what is actually supposed to be happening, because your flesh doesn't want that to happen. Your flesh doesn't want self-denial. That's why it's called self-denial. So you're in a good place if you find yourself having a hard time following God. That's how it works. If it was going to be easy, Jesus wouldn't need to die.
Yeah.
He wouldn't. He could just, you know, live a great life and then die of old age later on. Just follow my example. He carries a cross and dies and says, then walk in my footsteps. So yes, there are going to be times that things just don't click well. Keep going. That's part of the plan.
Yeah.
Or maybe you've been doing that and now you're searching for the will to continue.
Yeah.
Which will happen. That's part of the plan as well. I think it's a false presentation of Christianity that it's supposed to be hard all the time. You have a family, you have people that care about us, you have a place that can come in and talk about how great God is. So it's not always going to be, I'm hanging in there, bro. There are going to be times that you should enjoy this. But there are going to be times that it's going to be hard. And that doesn't mean that less of God is present. That doesn't mean that there's less hope and less future and less plans for you to prosper. It just means that you're doing it right. And your flesh is going to have an issue with that. So if you're searching for your will and looking for answers and I'm waiting for good things to happen, that might not. The plan might actually be that whatever situation, uncomfortable situation you're thinking of right now, might actually never get fixed.
Yeah.
It may always be that difficult. It might always be that uncomfortable. It doesn't mean that God is less than God. It just means that God is aware of how great heaven is.
Yeah.
So whatever the right now frustration is, like you'll get over it.
Yeah.
Just come home. So whether you're looking for God or looking for the will to keep going, just remember that discomfort is part of the plan. It's part of the perfect plan. And then at the end of it, we get to celebrate and be comfortable forever in a way that I think is sustainable and healthy and righteous and perfect in heaven. Amen?
Thank you for listening to this broadcast of the New York City Church of Christ in Brooklyn. For more information about our church, visit bkchurch.com.